the emergency evacuation procedure, I think most people are aware of it, but we'll go through it anyway. So don't expect a fire alarm if one happens. There is a fire exit behind me, this door here, and there's another one through there. And the facilities for ladies and gents are both out in the corridor there, and you should have water on the table in front of you. Apologies for absence, please, Will.
We've got four this evening from Councillor Sanderson, Janu Dean, Gardner and Duncan.
Thank you. Item 3, minutes of the meeting held on the 26th of January, which you should have in front of you. Do we have any matters of accuracy of the minutes? If not, I will move approval of those from the Chair. Well, do we have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Cousins. All those in favour, please vote now. Unanimous amongst those that are here. Thank you. Item 4, urgent business. I have no urgent business this evening. Item 5, declarations of interest. Do any members have any declarations of interest on the matters on the agenda this evening? No? Okay, thank you. Moving swiftly on. Are we having problems with the mic? Thank you. Item 6, the scrutiny review of the meeting start times and the management of meetings that we've been discussing for the last two or three meetings. Simon, I think you're going to talk us through this one.
Yes, just to introduce the report very briefly, we've had a couple of task group meetings to look at this scrutiny review, and after the final one, I went away and put together a report which I think reflects the findings of the review and the recommendations where they had support of the majority of members at the task group. I realise there were a number of recommendations that didn't have unanimous support, so I've drafted it based around where I thought the majority of people at the meetings had indicated their support. The report's here tonight for you to consider it, make any amendments and then approve it, and it would go on to PNR in June in terms of its next destination. I'm happy to take any questions or to take notes of any amendments that the committee agrees. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. Do members have any questions initially on the report? I'm sort of assuming everybody's had time to read it. Do you need a few minutes? Councillor Potter?
Yeah, there's. I've got one or two points here, but I'm looking at the executive summary, because obviously that gives us an easy roundup of the recommendations. And looking at little two, it's on page 10. So, little two, that the constitution be amended to bring forward the guillotine so that it takes effect after 3 hours. And what I was wondering was that if there were items that were lost by the guillotine, if they're carried over to the next meeting, does that mean that those items will go at the start of the next meeting? Because according to number one, the most important stuff would come first, so that would mean that they were then put to the back of the meeting, and are we just going to get a knock-on effect? But I suppose that's dependent on how much does get carried over.
Yes, I think it depends on how much is carried over and what the nature of the items is that are carried forward. Currently, the Constitution says that business adjourned from a previous meeting is dealt with towards the start of a full council, but if we were redrafting standing orders so that items for decision were always dealt with first, that wouldn't necessarily be the case.
But then it would naturally follow that the ones deferred would come first in the list of the also-rans, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think that if there were items for decision deferred, they'd be the first items for decision at the next meeting, and if there were items for discussion and information, they'd be at the top of the list of those items at the next meeting.
Do we have any further questions, Councillor Potter? Yeah?
Pray so. Looking at little four there... working practices amended so that questions to officers have to be dealt with ahead of rather than during meetings of full council. I can envisage a problem there in that if questions are put to officers, then we've got the time involved for the officers to reply. Presumably, those replies would need to go to all members of council because we're talking about full council. So if there's any supplementary questions pursuant to that, then you've got another. So there's this sort of to-ing and fro-ing. So is there enough time going to be built in if that was the case?
I suppose that's something for the committee to discuss in considering the recommendations. I think it's unusual that we have questions to our officers at full council. Most authorities I'm aware of, excepting the finance officer when the budget's set and the solicitor on points of legality, officers don't speak at all in the council meetings. There's nothing in the constitution that says questions can be put to officers, which is why the recommendation's phrased around working practices rather than standing orders. But ultimately, it would be for members to decide: could this work? How would it work? Are there alternatives? Like, could lead members, chairs of committees, be better briefed so they could field more questions at council rather than officers needing to do that? So I'll leave that open to the committee.
Yeah, just a couple of other minor points. Well, not minor points. The one about amendments to the minutes submitted in writing. We really need more of an effort to make sure that the minutes are absolutely right in the first place, because I've seen numerous times where we've had these arguments over the minutes and eventually somebody has conceded that they will be put right. So that would cure the problem of minutes being amended anyway. And occasionally, there are occasions when there's actually a debate going on over what is happening in the minutes, which would, of course, you get rid of that. And do we need a debate sometimes? But there's got to be an effort, more of an effort to make sure that those minutes really do reflect what happens in the meetings and not slightly changed. One sort of overall question is the reasoning behind all these items anyway. And obviously we're trying to save time at meetings, at full council meetings, and yet there's one or two of these that's going to involve extra work for officers. So is this not just moving the onus from the council time into officers' time? Obviously, the number one, that's not too much, but other than sort of shuffling things around. But certainly dealing with amendments to minutes, that's going to reflect on officers. Questions to officers, if there is to-ing and fro-ing, and perhaps we can get rid of some of those. Leader's statement, I don't think that's going to make too much difference, but we've got to be careful that we're not putting more work onto officers just to save a little bit of time in the council.
Can I respond to that, some of that? I think if we can actually bring the quality of debate and the efficient running of meetings to into a better shape, then the problems that we've sometimes had with the minutes would be avoided, because part of the problems that we have with the minutes is that the meetings go on for an awful long time, because there's always often amendment after amendment after amendment, and so any minute secretary is bound to sometimes get a bit confused by what's actually happening. And I think on the whole the minutes are well recorded, and no minutes should actually be verbatim. I don't think that is good practice in any meeting to provide verbatim minutes. I mean, one thing, comment that I wanted to make on these, the bullet points, as it were, that we talked about last time that we were going to put forward as recommendations, is that I think we should slightly alter the wording of Little 3, where it says the Constitution be amended to require amendments to the minutes. Now, my understanding is that you don't amend minutes unless it is a matter of accuracy. So could we not change the wording there to require changes to the accuracy of the minutes to be submitted in advance? Because I think it's the accuracy of the minutes rather than amending the minutes themselves that we need to be looking at. I don't know how other members feel about that. But that is always my understanding of when you look at minutes, you're looking at them for accuracy, not to debate them. And we have gone on to debate minutes over and over again recently, which I think we need to not really do. Councillor Jarrett?
I'm not sure that you're going to necessarily get rid of debate on the amendments anyway, because although we're going to be required to put the proposals for changes to the minutes in advance, it doesn't say that they'll necessarily get changed until the meeting happens. Unless I misunderstand what's proposed.
If I could comment on that, Chairman. I think the changes to the minutes wouldn't happen until the meeting had agreed them. That's correct, because when officers draft the minutes, that's the sort of final draft which is published, and then members may come back with questions or concerns or suggested changes, but it's not officers aren't in a position to change that. If one member comes back and says, I think there's something wrong here, it might not be the view of the majority of members, but it can be useful to know in advance what issues might be discussed, because then if we need to go back and listen to a recording or look at constitutional advice or talk to the solicitor, then there's an opportunity to do that ahead of the meeting. So it may mean at the meeting that the matter's dealt with more quickly.
Do we have any other comments? Councillor Potter?
Just a small point. If we're talking about you don't like the word amendments, if it could just simply be corrections, because if somebody's saying that's not right, then it has to be a correction, whether that's debated later or not, I think that should cover it.
But, Madam Chairman, is that point talking about the minutes of the previous full council meeting, or is it talking about the minutes of the PNR meeting that we're going to discuss when it's matters for decision?
It was for minutes of the previous full council we were talking about. Is that correct, Simon? Yeah, that was my understanding.
So we're not expecting members to submit amendments to the minutes of policy committees then, before the full council meeting?
No, although we discussed that at the previous task group meeting, that didn't seem to be the consensus of opinion at the meeting, so I'd not included that in the recommendations, although it is recorded in the findings that it was discussed and the different pros and cons that were mentioned at the task group.
Do we have any further questions? I just had one other that I wondered I would throw in here. I'm sure not sure what people will think of it. But the other thing that I've noticed at recent full council meetings is that I quite agree that we shouldn't be reading the leader's statement out, and that it should be circulated in advance. But I think the other thing that perhaps it would be worth putting a small point in is that any questions on the leader's statement should actually be on the leader's statement, not just that is used as an opportunity within the meeting to throw in a question about whatever. But I don't know how other members feel about that. But I think that's happened quite a lot, and I don't think that's good practice either, because it's supposed to be questions on the leader's statement. But I'm open to other people's thoughts.
But is that not already in the Constitution, then, that the questions are on the leader's statement?
Yes, the Constitution talks about, under that particular item, it being questions on the statement. So I don't think that's always been sort of rigorously enforced at the meetings, but it is already there in the Constitution.
Okay. So it's up to the Chairman of the Council to enforce that, isn't it? Not, yeah.
I wonder if it's worth making reference to, I don't know if you do make reference to that in the report, but I wonder whether it might be worth making reference to that just as almost like a reminder to members that that's the case.
I can add that in under the findings, would you want it rather than the recommendations?
Do we have any further questions or points that anybody wants to raise on the report? Still some reading going on, I think. Do you want a couple of minutes just to... No, you're fine. Okay. Anybody else?
I mean, the second bullet point on page 15, the second bullet point from the end is talking about the leader's statement, isn't it? So that little point
about
questions B.
Yeah.
On the statement as opposed to whatever the time of day it is.
Yes. Okay. Perhaps we won't go there tonight, Councillor Potter. Thank you. Okay, well, if that's sort of the end of the discussion, we now need to approve the report as amended, when Simon has amended it, for it to go forward to PNR. So... if there are no further questions, could we please vote on the report as we see it this evening? Thank you. That's unanimous. Thank you. So hopefully we can stick to the timescale that we were talking about. Thank you, Simon. Okay, item 7, Internal Audit Third Progress Report. I think you're going to take this, Rebecca, for us. Thank you.
That's it. There you go. Right, so this is the third Internal Audit Progress Report of 16-17, and it covers up to the end of March. Our reporting period goes up to the end of April. That's the deadlines for all the draft reports. So... obviously covers most of the year. The main page that summarises the progress so far is Appendix A, that's page 28. We're bringing 5 reports that have been completed since our last progress report to this committee. They're summarised in Appendix B. Since we produced this report, a further 4 reports have been issued in draft, so we're on track to complete all our work for this year. I won't go through each of the 5 reports that we've issued in detail, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Okay, do any members have any questions for Rebecca? Councillor Potter?
Yeah, there are a few items here where it says, well, obviously there's substantial assurance, high assurance, etc., and there's a few with no opinion given. Mm-hmm. Why is that, please?
So there are a few that are no opinion given that are... Let me go through them. The ones like the customer expectations, that was around supporting work on the transformation programme, so that was ongoing... work with officers, and we didn't complete a final report for that because it was ad hoc work. The follow-up, similarly, we don't complete a report, and the same with the idea work, because those were days in there to provide more responsive audit work. The one report that we've completed, which is included in this summary, is risk management. We didn't give an opinion because there's a lot of work going on at the moment on risk management, and we felt it wasn't appropriate. We couldn't reach a conclusion because things were progressing so much at the time, so we think it's more appropriate to come back. We do that every year, so we'll come back next year. Was that covered all of them? Yeah.
Okay. Do we have any questions?
Looking still at page 28, which I don't know if it comes under data protection or risk management, but I think it would be this time last year where we were told that a lot of our documents were stored in the garage outside. Do you know if that's been stopped?
Yeah, that came under disaster recovery. Which is now, we've combined that with business continuity this year. It is now in draft, as I understand it, and being discussed with offices. As I understand it, there are a few changes that haven't been made yet because of a lot of the restructuring work that's been happening. So completing that business continuity and disaster recovery work, some of that has been left to be finalised once all the new teams are sort of, you know, in place.
Yeah.
So that should be happening now. The tapes might still be there.
Right, okay, thank you.
Do we have any further questions? Councillor Potter?
I've got quite a few points to raise. I'm on page 30 now, where it says, well, it's just going over from 29 to 30, under the data protection and security, where it said two of the findings from the January 2017 visit were at the same locations as findings in June 2016. So evidently somebody hadn't actually taken note of what they were told about document security. So as this is, it's happened the same thing twice, what action is being taken on that, and is on what sort of disciplinary action is likely to be taken on a third strike, if you like?
Yeah, is that one more for you, I believe?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Two of the findings were at the same locations. Slightly different issues. We've spoken to the staff. As far as I'm concerned, in the medium term, we're going to continue with these data sweeps. And, you know, should it happen again, we'll take appropriate action dependent on what we found. And that could involve disciplinary action or potentially not, depending on what it is.
Thank you. On to the housing benefits thing. Just at the top of the management actions agreed, where it says management are exploring the option of outsourcing some of the assessing to help improve performance, etc. If you're looking to outsource, isn't that a policy decision? So will that come to full council?
It's not my area of responsibility, and I'm not sure if it's just a slightly bad choice of word in outsourcing. Maybe in the longer term we're looking at that. We're reviewing all our services and how we deliver them. In the short term, we're looking at just buying in hired help, in effect, so it's not a formal outsourcing of the service. It's just bringing in a company to help us over the hurdle.
We have, where it's areas for improvement in the comments column, still on page 30, it's saying about a substantial backlog has built up over the last few months of 2016 with the housing benefits. So do we know how big this backlog was, let's say, the end of October, November, December, or sort of in terms, monthly terms, so that we can see whether this is growing, stabilised, reducing?
I don't have the data to hand. I don't know if you do, Rebecca.
No, I don't have the data to hand, and obviously when we do the audit, it is a point in time, so we only do it up to that and don't continue to monitor it. But obviously it is an area that management are aware of, and that's part of why that agreed action around not outsourcing but seeking sort of external support, to provide that resilience where there is a potential build-up of backlog to manage it back down again. So I don't have the up-to-date figures.
Again, bottom of the comments page, where it says the officer who processes a majority of DHPs is no longer in post from April 2017. So notes would be a help. But if we've got a build-up already, it doesn't sound terribly efficient if the officer is no longer in post. We've had a major reorganisation, so it seems to me that it's going to be quite difficult to recover from something like that. While I'm thinking about it, if there is a substantial backlog, what contingency is there in place for claimants? Because presumably if their benefits are being delayed, these are the sort of people that do not have the resources to cover any sort of lengthy delay.
I'm sure members will be aware that in terms of the delays, a lot of this is because of universal credit, so having to go through the universal credit process, which is taking, I think, over 6 weeks at the moment before we can actually start looking at claims. Just to try and, correct me if I'm wrong here, to try and distinguish between the housing benefit claims and the other thing that we're talking about, which are discretionary housing payments. So same area, but two separate processes. So the discretionary housing payments are separate to the housing benefit normal process. And I'm presuming, though I'm not 100% sure, that within the discretionary housing payments process, there is the ability for the council to award a housing payment where some of our residents are in real need and they've not got the money up front from Universal Credit.
Right, I'm moving on to risk management on page 31 now, under the comments, where it says, we saw that corporate risks were not subject to any regular systematic monitoring and review on the covalence system. And then a bit further down, the way risks are currently captured and structured on covalent does not encourage effective management of those risks. So I'm hoping that those are actually in hand, because under the management actions agreed, it doesn't seem to cover that. But, I mean, at the risk of being baffled by management speak, what's the risk from inadequate risk management?
In answer to the management actions side, yes, they are in hand. We've got some risk management training scheduled in that we're facilitating to refresh some of these processes, and a lot of those comments around covalent are specifically around the use of the system. So it's not saying the risks aren't being managed, but a lot of it's how they're documented and achieving that balance of it not becoming an overly burdensome process, but it being an effective process. So that's what the training will focus on.
Sorry, last one, Chair. You'll be pleased to hear. At the bottom of that comments column there. In total, 12 areas for improvements were shared to help the council make the necessary improvements. The word shared there is interesting. Who were they shared with and for what purpose?
I would assume they were shared with officers of the council in order to create the action plan to deal with them. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's been shared with management. So we've got quite a detailed action plan, which we're going to start to address with this training next week, in fact.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions? Councillor Wainwright?
No, I think just a comment, really, that page 30, it just shows if Councillor Potter had been prepared to ask his questions from officers before this meeting, then he would have got perhaps a better answer from Claire Slater, who would be looking after that. I'm not saying your question or your answers weren't correct, Peter, but I think Claire's the one that would give a fuller answer.
Chair, I would certainly agree with that. Claire would definitely have given a better answer.
Okay, if we've got no further questions, that report is just for members to note, so we don't need to vote on that one. Moving on, again, this is you again, Rebecca, I believe. So the internal audit plan, please.
Yeah, so this is our plan of audit work for next year. You can see it in detail, Appendix A. Just as background, in preparing the plan, we consult the risk register, do a general risk assessment of activities at the council. That's also based on risks that are emerging nationally. We discuss issues with management that would be suitable for inclusion in the plan, and that's how we come to this list. The plan's presented in the same format as it was last year, and we've got the same number of days in there. The main difference you'll see is that we've this year included more detail on the counter fraud and the information governance work, which is on page 43. And that's work that has been happening every year. It's the same number of days as last year again. It's just we thought it was helpful for members to include it in the report as well. So, again, I won't go through each audit in detail, but I'll take any questions you have from the plan.
Thank you. Councillor Jarrett.
Could I ask what sort of information you're looking for in terms of information fraud?
So we'll look at national information that comes through in terms of, you know, guidance that's being issued to local authorities and other, you know, things like IT information security alerts, those kind of one of the things that's in the plan this year, for example, is procurement based on a national procurement report. So we gather a wide range of sort of national and more local information to guide our risk assessment and what's going to be.
So how, if this, my understanding from what you've said, and I might be just like incompetent at understanding this, is that all this information that you're looking at is coming from other regulatory authorities. So why would we expect to find fraud in that information?
It's not just other regulatory authorities. It's some, you know, national publications where they're flagging frauds that might have occurred in similar organisations. So it highlights a risk of a similar thing occurring here.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions, members? No? Okay, well, this report is for your approval. So we need to vote on it, please. So could you all vote now? Thank you. That is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. To start, I'd like to welcome Tom to the team and apologise for a couple of typos in my first report. I didn't write this report, actually, but I'm Matthew Moore and I'm the audit manager, so on page two it says Rob, who was the old one, yeah. And Tom Brough. This is not Tom Solby, so that's just the apologies for those. So this is the external audit plan for 2016-17, and I'd like to just assume that you've read the paper, the first thing to sort of introduce is a number of the things that I have to do under the auditing standards. So on page 15, which is page 60 on the agenda, there's a page on independence and objectivity. So we have to demonstrate to yourselves that we are independent and objective. And we've made a statement at this point to say that we are, and there's no issues involved at this stage. And should anything occur, we will bring that to your attention at any point during the audit. So, following that, I'd like to move on to the financial statement, which is on page 49, and sort of highlight the various risk assessments that we have carried out. And we've identified at this stage what we see as three significant risks, two of them are which are standard within the auditing profession, which is the management override of controls and fraud and revenue recognition. We're not saying that we've found any or we'd expect to see any of those, but those are the standard risks that we always have to carry out procedures on to ensure that those aren't and haven't happened. And then a specific risk for local governments across the country is the triennial review of the pension scheme, which is on page 50, so that's raised as a significant risk in this year. We're not expecting it to cause any issues, it's just that should anything have gone wrong with it, it sets the liability base for your pension liability for the next 3 years. So it's clearly something we'd need to make sure is correct, and we've got some work to be done on that. There is one other area of audit focus, which is a change in the accounting SIPFA guide this year, which is on page 51, which I just highlight to you. You probably won't actually see much difference as it actually happens here because of the way that the council structured itself anyway. So it's probably very limited issues for yourselves, but we just needed to raise that as a area of focus. And then the final point I'd like to raise on the accounts is we provide an opinion on your accounts based on a materiality, and the materiality is set at £400,000 for the authority, and we'll have a reporting threshold of £20,000. So should we find any issues above 20,000, we will report them to you. And obviously anything around 400,000 would start to impact on any of the opinions that we're giving. And those will be reported back to you in September in the IC 260. So that covers the accounts. In terms of the value for money work, which is summarised on the background summarised on page 53, this is really an ongoing process, and as we're sort of now being on site for the interim work and following meetings and discussions with management, we've started our risk assessment, and at this stage we don't identify any significant risks that should impact on the VFM conclusion at this stage. However, if there's anything that comes to our attention during obviously the further work and the year end work, or if anything comes out from information that we get provided, we'll report those things back to you. So at this stage there's nothing that we need to draw to your attention. So I think that is all I really need to say. So if there's any questions, I'm quite happy to take any.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from members on this report? Councillor Jarrett?
Yeah, just thanks for that, because not being an accountant, I find the reports themselves quite difficult to understand. But you, on the materiality, you say that you will report back in September in if you find variations according to these 20,000, 400,000. If you found something like this, would you wait until September to actually identify to the officers that there could be a problem?
Yeah, I mean, that's the formal reporting back to the audit committee from a formal report position. I mean, what we would be doing is working alongside the officers and reporting to them as soon as anything's identified, to obviously get their viewpoint. Because a lot of the time it can be around a judgment call, you know, our judgment against officers. And, you know, so we tend to have that discussion and we come to a conclusion between ourselves before anything gets reported back to the members. So that's just the September bit's the final formal reporting back when we provided the opinion report.
Okay. Okay, do we have any other questions from members? No, don't think so. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And our... That isn't one that we need to vote on, is it? It's for note to note. Yeah, okay, thank you. Our final item is the KPMG technical update, which I think you've had in a separate email, members, so you should have that before you as well.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This is really for your information. We have an external audit progress report, which I think I've probably part covered anyway in the commentary before, is that we've been on site end of March, at beginning of April, to start the interim work. There's a little bit of work to conclude on that. I think the findings at the moment are not significant to raise for your attention, so we'll formally report those back through the next progress report when those works are final. But as at this point, there's nothing significant to report. And I'm quite happy to ask if anybody's got any questions on any of the detail within the technical update or would like further information, I'll be happy to provide that.
Okay, thank you. Do you members have any questions on this one? You may want to sort of go away, read it and inwardly digest it a little more, and we could submit questions if people wanted to do that afterwards, having listened to your presentation this evening. Does anybody have any questions at the moment? No? Okay, well, again, this is a report just to note. Thank you very much. That's the end of the meeting. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your attendance. And thank you to our guests for coming on this evening. Thank you.
No, Chairman, you wouldn't like another go at chairing full council, would you?